So we did a good survey in the introduction, and then we've covered what really is the tricky topic, which is the physical structure of how houses and signs work together. And with a little practice, I assure you this will become second nature, and you will be reading charts just like you know how to read them. And imagine trying to read charts without this information. Right? Imagine, like, and I don't know any astrology book that actually explains it like this. The thing with a lot of astrology books is that they assume, they're almost all written from the viewpoint of assuming that you already know astrology, which is a perfectly ridiculous posture for a how-to book to take. You have to assume that people don't know the subject and be able to lead them in. And here is the lead-in, basically. So we've got the tricky part, which is the intersection of houses and signs. And to some extent, we've looked at rulerships, and it sounds like people are picking up on the idea that the sign intersects with a house, and the point of intersection tells you what planet to look for. And part of how you read the house is what's in the house, and part of how you read the house is where the house ruler is. Right?
Right.
Now, I began by saying houses provide context. They help frame the question. I had a kind of a stunning experience on one of these astrological message boards a few years back of people who presume themselves to be horoscope writers. And I, you know, have a lot of experience doing that. And I mentioned something about houses. And the person said, one of these writers said, who apparently had written quite a few columns, I don't trust the houses. And I'm thinking, if you have a Venus and Mars conjunction on one day, let's say it's like, you know, any average day, and you have to write a daily horoscope, and on the day that you write that daily horoscope, there's a Venus conjunction with Mars. Well, you have to write that for 12 signs. How do you know where that Venus and Mars conjunction shows up in the person's life? Will you know by what house it's in? So the Venus-Mars conjunction is waiting for context. It's a thing. It's an event. It's happening. You can practically, I mean, you can look up in the sky and see a Venus-Mars conjunction. It's right there. But in terms of interpreting it, the whole purpose of astrology, right? It's about interpretation. This is why the horoscope column, in my opinion, is where the tires meet the highway. There are plenty of astrologers who will, to this day, say that newspaper horoscopes are bullshit, except for one slight conceptual problem with that. Newspaper horoscopes are doing or attempting to do the very thing that astrology is supposed to do and pretty much has no value if it doesn't do, which is interpret things. And so the interpretation piece comes largely from the house. So the houses contain confluence of themes, physical locations, and relationships. Let's take a house and consider it in theory, basically. We're not going to use an example chart. Let's just take the fourth house and talk about what the fourth house is about. Anybody want to go? I'm going to leave. We're in interactive mode, which I'll do till things get noisy. I've got a piece of pink loose leaf paper from CVS. And
I think it's the place where people most perceive that it's home. But my feeling of it now, as I've gotten more and more comfortable within astrology, is the place where you feel at home.
Great.
Or someone is at home.
Okay.
Perception of it.
So that's kind of a spiritual dimension to it, right? Place where you feel home. What else about the fourth? You can just sort of like popcorn this out. Be bold. Be brave. You all read some
comfort
books,
issues.
Spent money on it.
Comfort issues, safety issues.
Great. Safety. What else?
I would interpret it.
You retreat from the origin.
Retreat. Do you say storage?
Privacy.
Privacy. Great.
Would parents be associated?
Parents, yes.
No, father, actually. I was thinking home of origin.
The family of origin, home of origin, yes. Ancestral home. If anybody's got your volume turned up loud, can you turn it down, please? Just so it's loud enough to hear in proximity so we don't all hear ourselves coming back to ourselves. Okay. And I'm sure there's some people who are, like, listening, like, with the stereo on in the house and tidying up while they're listening. So, home of origin, which could include also ancestral home.
Mm-hmm.
Anything more about the ancestral bit? What about the IC, the beginning of the fourth house, the thing that's right below the midheaven?
Very private, personal area of the chart.
Okay, someone's doing home renovation.
Someone's hammering.
They're working on the fourth house. They've...
No, it's the room within the room. It's the room.
Yeah, she's trying to get out of office.
Well, if someone's doing renovation...
Because it's hitting mute.
If someone's doing home renovation during our discussion of the fourth house, we're definitely going to go to the fifth house next.
All right.
And we can have the online orgy that I've been planning. Okay, so more on the fourth house. What's the IC? We have this seminar open up 24/7, so anybody want to do that, we're good.
Hey, it could work, yeah.
The IC, anybody know what that is? Any thoughts on that?
It's a very personal and private part of the chart. It's the opposing the midheaven.
What is Len? You would know this. What does it stand for in Latin? Hold on. If you don't know, I'll get my dictionary out.
Yeah, I
MS, isn't it MS coli?
MS coli, right.
Oh, I like that.
I don't pronounce Latin very well.
Cool. By the way,
Midwestern upbringing.
You want to get books. You don't want to do all your study on the internet. Books are not always right, and books have problems, but we have to get away from doing this all online. And two essential books to have are the Astrology Encyclopedia by a guy named Lewis. You probably pick it up for 99 cents. And the Fred Gettings, the Dictionary of Astrology. Again, you should be able to find it. It's not going to be like the Astrological Mandala, which is going for $100 now. But let's look up the IC in the Dictionary of Astrology. Imum coli, IMUMCOELI. The point directly opposite the midheaven, meaning basically straight down. In many systems of house divisions, it's also the cusp of the fourth house. The term imum coli means bottom of the sky in Latin. Imum coli is often used interchangeably with the word nadir, N-A-D-I-R, meaning low point, although the usage is technically incorrect. The nadir is the point directly opposite the zenith, not the point opposite the midheaven. So there's a point in the chart called the zenith. There's a lot of points that we don't know about anymore because computers are doing all the work. So it's not really the nadir. It's the imum coli, and it's the beginning of the fourth house in most house systems. And you can think of it as being the taproot. Think of the fourth house cusp being a spiral down into time and into your ancestry. So that line gets a special meaning. And I have discerned, typically connected with the father's lineage. Now, one of my early teachers said, yes, the fourth house cusp is in the fourth house can involve the father's lineage and family, and the tenth house can involve the mother's lineage and family. But given various changes in society, it's important to check both the fourth and the tenth for elements of mother and for father. That said, there's a chart in my collection that's one of the most astonishing charts in my entire collection, and I'll tell you a little story about the Imam Coli, the IC, the fourth house cusp in my chart. That is at 14 and change Virgo, which makes it 15 degrees of Virgo. We're occupying degree 15. So I have 15 Virgo as the beginning of my fourth house. And one day in the 90s, back in the beginning of my astrology work, I decided I had to go to Sicily and go to the last known place in Sicily that my paternal godmother, Aunt Josie, the benefactor, without whom I wouldn't have a career or planet waves or might not even be alive, last left Sicily. So she's my actually godmother, Roman Catholic, certified godmother, who in the absence of my mother for many years was my mom. I'm going to put it into lecture mode again. And so I planned this trip to Sicily, and I didn't even plan it. I was in Athens, and I had a week and enough money to go one place, so I thought, well, I can go to Mykonos and party, or I can go to Sicily and see what's there. So get a flight to Palermo, stay in Palermo for a couple of days, and I figure out it's not even Italy, it's Sicily. It's even, you know, more chaotic than Italy. I find out how to get a bus, and for a couple of bucks, I get on a bus to this town. I'm going for this town called Piazza Armerina, Sicily, the last known place that my father's family emigrated from. So I get on this bus, and the bus is like, it takes like 3 hours to get, it's 3 hours to get from Palermo. It's probably like 20 miles. It takes forever, and it's late, and the bus is packed, and we're driving through the hills and dales of Sicily. And the bus leaves me sort of near this town. I've got to get a second bus to get to Piazza Armerina. And I get on the second bus, and I plant my feet on the ground in this town. And look at my watch. The moment my feet touch the earth in Piazza Armerina, my paternal ancestral ground, and I call up David Rell from the Astrology Center of America, one of my very best teachers who died about 2 years ago, and I give him the birth data. This is prior to email. I give him the birth data, and he faxes me back a chart to this hotel in Sicily. And the chart had 15 Virgo rising. At the minute I put my feet on the ground. Mind you, the IC moves 1 degree every 4 minutes. And with this long, circuitous, completely random, unplanned, untimed journey, I put my feet on the ground in my paternal ancestry hometown, and there was, once again, 15 Virgo, Sabian symbol, the branching of the rod. That's how wild this can be. So there's confirmation, at least in my life and the lives of many people, for example, dealing with questions about estates, that the first thing to check with the fourth is fathers. And then you just do a check, and you check the rulers, and you just redo the chart using the fourth as the mother and the tenth as the father. And so follow me on that. So you're doing some matching and fitting here. But the fourth, in the first instance, is fathers, and the second instance is mothers. We see this ancestry thing. And there was one other thought. Is this evoking anything here? What else in the fourth? Any other thoughts to add about the fourth? No? Nope, I've got some hands up. All right. Are these the old calls? Amy J., anything?
No, it wasn't me.
Okay, I'll clear that. Judy, you? Judy Allen? Was that from last time? I think it was from last time.
Last time.
Okay, so what do we have? Let's take this group of themes we have. Home, feeling of home, safety, retreat, privacy, parents, ancestral home, privacy, father, mother. Get the idea? So what's our confluence of theme? What do these all have in common? This is an easy house.
Family.
Yes.
DNA.
DNA, yes. Yep, you can imagine that taproot fourth cusp spiraling DNA into the past. Yep.
Mm-hmm. All the energy associated with it, too. Yep.
Yes.
And I was going to say the genetic legacy.
Yes, DNA. Mm-hmm. Someone said something else?
And the place where you have your back against your cave wall.
Interesting image.
And because it is the bottom of the sky, it is below the horizon as far as it can get, and is therefore not easily seen.
Yes.
So yep. The influence that our ancestors have on us.
In part, that's one place to find is to one place to consider it. It's much more of a. It's more the ancestors you know. The fourth.
Okay.
It's the people that you met as a child, all the aunts and uncles, and cousins, and all the people that came over for Christmas and Easter and all that. I don't believe it includes. Though the DNA's there, all the dead ancestors, I think, they're more hanging out in the 12th house. If you're going ancestor hunting for, like, great-great-great-great-grandpeople, they're more in the mystical realm, whereas the 4th is more of a tangible physical space. Its physical space is the homestead.
Got it.
Okay. Right? The primary... It's the homestead, and in the case of my Sicily story... if we trust my divination skills, I fairly well divine that as being also something about the location of origin of the families connected to the fourth house. My family emigrates from this town, and the fourth house shows up right there. So this is a pretty easy one to see the confluence. We've got images of homes and caves and dwellings and being secure, and the fourth house is like the Fourth Amendment, you know, being secure in your papers and possessions.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It would it be someone who was like a surrogate mother or aunts and uncles, or is it blood only?
Well, that is an interesting question, and I would say that is a question more about specific... A specific case. So for example, let's say you're reading for an adopted person. And these cases get interesting, and I've got a file going on one of my, like, pieces I've wanted to write. I have a list of pieces I've wanted to write for 20 years. My adoption piece is one of them. When you're working with an adoption case, you often have numerous sets of parents. You have the birth parents. You have the foster parents, sometimes they play a role. You have the adoptive parents, and then often the adoptive parents get divorced and marry new people, and you've got these adoptive step-parents. There can be four sets of parents in the life of an adopted person. And
Yeah. You
have to find them all. You have to look for patterns in the chart where you, like, oh, that one, follow the rules, look around, sniff it out, listen to what the person's saying. That looks like your stepmother, and that looks like your stepfather, and that Uranus might be both your birth father and your adoptive father, and so forth. So when you get into special cases like that, where there's surrogates, step-parents, a tendency to adopt families like I have, you know, having had some weird stuff in my family of origin, I developed this ability to just sort of like be the cat who can walk into the house and they give you food. So those are interesting circumstances, right? And that we're getting into we'd need to do case studies for that. And adoption makes awesome case studies, because the patterns and the charts and the stories are always so interesting, and the making the correspondences up is interesting.
A mentor, someone that you consider a mentor, like, but who's parental in the mentoring, also be considered?
Maybe. Again, you'd have to look. I've never thought of mentors as being a fourth house thing.
Okay.
It would depend on the mentorship relationship. But for example, I mean, I have a mentor that I have, who shaped my life, and, he's Virgo rising. He has mid Virgo, Joe Truso has mid Virgo rising. So you may be onto something with that, because his rising sign is my fourth house.
Right. And there's few places
I feel safer and more at home than in his counseling room.
Exactly.
And after knowing him since 1992, I'm now invited up into the library on the upper floor. So I can come to the Tantra library and read when I want. So that's interesting. And the Aquarius moon, he has an Aquarius moon also, as does my father. So there's other correspondences to that, but that also somewhat affirms your theory, because he and my dad and a therapy teacher on the West Coast all have Aquarius moon.
Very interesting.
So, you know, partly we depend on who the mentor is. Can we get the person's chart? How does the person describe him? When the mentor becomes more of a teaching colleague, a fellow teacher, right? The authority relationship is there. I preserve the authority relationship I have with Joe. I don't want to not have him be an authority. But as the years have gone on and we have acquired the same language or similar language and can communicate, the relationship is more on the level of, you know, senior faculty and junior faculty at a university of the universe. So, mentorship, interesting subject related to Chiron, by the way, and that would make a great class to do facets of Chiron in a class. So, physical space, we've got the idea. Home, any place you genuinely feel actually at home, ancestral home and homestead, connection to ancestral home in the form of Piazza Armerina or any associated place, your retreat, your cave, your privacy, all this. We've got now confluence of themes, physical space, and relationships.
And you mentioned the moon.
Yeah. Well, it just happened to come up in the example that I gave about a double connection to Joe, which was him having Virgo rising and Virgo being my fourth house.
But the moon seems to be very, very comfortable down at the bottom of the sky, so to speak.
It can be, but it might not make the person comfortable handling a crisis or being out in the open.
Absolutely.
You know, I have an eighth house moon, so I'm pretty good when a crisis happens. Anybody with an eighth house moon will have that skill. You want a midwife or something like that, you want the person to have an eighth house moon. You want them to not be fazed by serious crisis. So the moon is going to tell you a lot of things, and the moon is kind of it can appear anywhere, and the moon will represent a kind of a comfort zone. But it's more about your personality. The moon's more about your personality as an extension of a comfort zone. One last thought about the fourth house. In classical astrology, the fourth house represents the ending of the matter.
It all comes back home.
It all comes back home. So the
chicken's coming home to roost.
Yeah, you might say that. Be fun to study Donald Trump's charts now and look at the nuances of what's going on. We can't quite get the Republican Party down to a chart, but that would be a fun one to count its chickens coming home to roost, which is going to happen on Sunday. So what we can see here, go ahead. Okay, this house is, we can see that it is a confluence of themes, but they're kind of bubbling and interacting with one another. It's not a dead list, right? We've brought this house to life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Anybody
not feeling that?
Yes. Yes.
It's a living concept.
Yes.
It works for you.
Yes.
It's like a dog. You whistle and it comes. As Crowley said, we live with the archetypes and they live with us. Think about that. When you pull a tarot card, Aleister Crowley, the evilest man of the world, we live with them and they live with us. So these are living traditions. Someone sounds like they're doing plumbing work. They're living things, and we experience them. We are in them. We come and go from them. We learn from them. We experiment with them as we do astrology. And ultimately, we physically actually go there and plop ourselves down on the couch in the case of the fourth house. Okay, so let me put this back. Hopefully the plumbing work has stopped. Are there any thoughts or questions here? Like, let's at least say, do we have the idea of the confluence of themes, the physical location, and the people involved?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes.
Good. And you don't, there's 12 houses. You don't want a house to mean everything. You want to leave some stuff for the other houses. You know, for example, all those dead ancestors. There's a lot of them, you know. Once Carol Van Strom's kid, Nico, who knows calculus, did the factorials, how many generations back would it take to fill Madison Square Garden with your ancestors? Madison Square Garden, 24,000 people, population of my town. It would take about 11 generations back, and all of your ancestors would fill up Madison Square Garden. 11 meager generations. We're in 12th house territory. You don't know their names. A fun exercise is try to name all your great-grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
Try it when we're done. Tell me if you can name all 8 of them and how long it takes you to think of them. Then go back one generation. Can you name any of your great-great-grandparents? Pretty cool. Okay, let's do the 5th house now. So what are our associations with house 5? Anybody?
Creativity.
What's that?
Art. Art.
Yes, good.
Sex for fun.
Play. Duration.
What is that? Play?
Children,
yep.
Individuation.
Yep.
Joy.
What is it?
Joy,
happiness.
Gambling.
Yep.
Sports,
yes. And things and sports like zip line and bungee jumping could be competitive or not.
Adventure. Yeah.
Risk taking.
Risks, yes. Yep.
Love affairs.
Yes. Yep. So what's the theme that they all have in common? It's easy to see this.
Play. Lightness.
Well, that's pleasure. Lightness is somewhat abstract. But pleasure and play.
Experimentation. Yeah. Experimentation.
Yes. Yes, the 5th house strongly favors experimentation and experience.
Expansiveness of experience, yeah.
Expansiveness. Well, let's hold that thought. Direct experience. The 5th, you can, for example, if you see a planet in the 5th, you know the person's going to want to have direct experience of that planet. They're not going to, they need the experience.
Tangible, then. Okay.
It's tangible. But the meta theme is basically approaching the world with the curiosity and love and trust of a child for fun. And different people have different ways of doing this. Some, you know, as the old Irish folk song says, some take delight in fishing and boating, and some take delight in the carriage rolling. I take delight in the fruit of the barley, courting pretty women in the morning so early. Remember that song? Mulsha ringa durum dom, jack whack fall the daddy-o, there's whiskey in the jar.
Yeah. Oh. No.
Jerry does a great version of that one. So
I just sing it all the time.
What's that? Used to sing it
no,
all
I'm
the
kidding.
Time.
Just singing it all the time.
It's a fun one. Yeah. I'll send out the Jerry Garcia version. It's a good one to sing to your dogs because it's so much fun.
All right.
So very 5th house, right? So Going, you like to, everyone has the thing that's the most fun thing that they like to do. Some take delight in fishing and boating, and others take delight in the carriage or rolling, right? It's like, this is really cool lyrics. That's the feeling of the fifth house. Pleasure, play, and fun, the real thing. And so, for example, if I have, does it surprise anyone? Let me check my, depending on your house system. I either have Libra or Scorpio on that house. Let's say Scorpio. That makes sense, right? I have Scorpio on the fifth house.
Yeah.
Most of you have some concept of my idea of fun. And Neptune in the fifth, right? So the sign then defines.
So it can be serious. It can be serious fun.
Sure, Capricorn on the fifth can be serious fun. this is, you know, Capricorn. But the thing with Capricorn on the fifth can also describe someone who was denied the fun of childhood. You see, it can work the other way.
Yeah.
And Virgos. Virgos with Capricorn on the solar fifth often benefit from counseling. I've never had this fail. You didn't have enough fun as a child. You need to have more fun now. Anybody with a strong Capricorn or Virgo signature is going to have that. Okay, so you need to you're an adult now, and you need some childhood fun. Go find some things you like to do. Color, you like to color. You want to jump out of an airplane. You need to bungee jump. You need to go in the woods, light a fire. What was the thing you wanted to do as a kid that you couldn't do as a kid, and now you're an adult and you've got a credit card in your pocket and you can do it? So this could also work, for example, with Saturn in the fifth house. The whatever sign it might be in, it might be like, okay, you know, you can relax and have some fun. And the astrologer's job is to give the person permission to relax and have some fun. But take, for example, Chiron in the fifth house, and they're going to be like, gimme. Gotta have it. Or a potentially injured sense of fun. You got to check. You got to ask the person, what do you like to do? Person might show up and say, God, my life is so boring. I really want to do something interesting. Well, good place to start the reading is the fifth house. So, it's not that difficult. Now, let's do physical environments associated with the fifth. This is going to come right out of the subject matter. Anybody want to take a few shots at it?
Bedroom.
That would seem to be more fourth house.
Art studio.
But there's a crossover with the bedroom. Art studio, yes, let's hold the art studio thought. I'm thinking bedroom is more really private space, but the activity people have is more of a fifth house activity. However, most fifth house sex takes place places like in the car or in some spontaneous place, like a classroom in a school at night or in a hotel room or whatever. So the activity, that playful sex activity, transposes itself. And one of my theories of life is that there should be a space in the home devoted to fifth house sex, to play, a play space. You walk into Betty Dodson's apartment and the altar is set up with like 50 tempered glass dildos in the mirror and the whole bit. She has her play space put right in the middle of her Madison Avenue living room. I think every home should have a playroom in it of some kind. Whatever that might be, the man cave or the, you know, for a lot of people who like to cook, the kitchen is the place where they play, even though it's borderline fourth, fifth. But here's where we're seeing themes of the fourth running into the fifth. So we get a borderland between the fourth and the fifth, for example, that might include the use of the bedroom as a play space, the use of the kitchen, fourth house thing, as a play space. Right? Getting that there? Is that making sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the environments are not strict environments. There's gradation between, you know, the bedroom door might be open or it might be closed. That room might be used in more of a fourth house context in one day, in a fifth house context another way. So these neighboring houses have that overflow in both directions, like a brackish estuary. Sometimes it's more saline, sometimes it's more fresh. So let's now, while we're going in order here, let's consider the sixth house and then look at the cusp between the fifth and the sixth house. So what are sixth house activities?
Daily activities.
Quotidian daily activity. Like going to work. Walk the dog. What else?
Eating.
Maybe eating. Let's put that on hold. Eating lunch at work for sure. Work.
Exercise,
yes.
Routine, anything you do that's a more routine thing that sets your schedule.
Yeah, excellent.
Service.
And volunteering.
Yes, as part of service, yep.
Co-workers and clients.
What's that?
Co-workers and clients.
This gets into the relationships. So I'm going to put that on a separate list. Co-workers and clients.
Health and diet.
Health and diet, yes.
Is self-improvement? Is that too general?
I would say that with a topic like self-improvement, there's a sixth house take on it, and there might be other takes on it. For example, ninth house self-improvement is I'm going to be a more spiritual person, but a sixth house self-improvement concept might be I'm going to clean up my diet and lose a little weight and exercise every day.
Okay. So health?
Health.
So fitness might go in this house?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. Health and fitness and matters of medicine. When checking, for example, a medical situation, you'll often refer to the sixth house for information about the medical situation.
Okay.
How about volunteer work?
Absolutely. As part of service.
Why is service? I'm not quite getting the connection.
The interesting thing about the houses is that the further back you look, the simpler of a list you see. And if we look at Lily's, if we look at the classical concepts of the fifth house, sixth house, coming out of the medieval era into the classical era, into the pre-modern. I think that modern astrology begins with Christian astrology in 1647. Lily lists military service as a keynote of the sixth. So one of the core ideas of the sixth is the military.
I see.
And so the military has all this. Pardon?
I'm sorry. So it's service as in military, but it's not service. If you volunteer at a soup kitchen, is that
sure?
Is that sick?
Yes, and it's okay. We're not stuck on the. Hold on, I'm getting some slapback. I'm going to put it into left.
Yeah.
We're not stuck on the definitions that Lily has given us, but they are interesting points of origin that help orient the discussion. And they also happen to be not that well known by many contemporary astrologers who don't necessarily know to check the sixth house for matters involving the military. We do very few readings involving matters of the military. But we certainly might be doing them in mundane astrology, and we certainly might be working with a veteran. An examination of the sixth house might help you understand, along with their telling of the story, their motives for being in the service, right? Because the military is called the service, right? Everyone's supposed to know what it means. I'm in the service. Well, it means you're trained to shoot a gun and be in the military and take orders. And it descends, the themes of the sixth branch out from this concept of military service into things like teaching and being a healer. So I'm going to put it back in interactive mode. Hopefully sound has gone away.
Being of service. Yeah.
Hey, everybody, turn your radio down out there in Radio Land just so you can hear it. Don't have it be so loud it thunders throughout the entire fourth house because it's bleeding over into the house. So what about physical spaces connected with the sixth house?
What house?
Sixth house, the house we're working on. Physical locations.
Okay, well, okay. The office.
Great. Easy, come on.
Place of employment, maybe.
What's that?
Place of employment?
Sure, the office. The place where you go to work.
Institutions?
Depends. Institutions in general, the larger they are, the more they morph over into the opposite house, the 12th.
Mm-hmm. I would think small retail businesses, like going to the cleaners or a shoemaker or, you know, someplace like that.
Okay, so here's it's a little bit subtle. It depends. I think that's more of local third house mercantile activities.
Okay.
There's a house that's devoted to mercantile activities, which I think is the third. Depends. Amazon.com might not count.
Wow, somebody has their speakers turned way up.
If you're listening, you should have no problem hearing me say this. If your speakers are turned way up, can you please turn them down? They're feeding back.
You're right. It could be a
problem. Just use earbuds and not on speaker. Yeah.
There you
okay.
go.
Yeah. So let's do this as long as we can stand. More physical spaces. Okay, let's raise your hand. Press star 2 if you have an idea here, and I'll unmute you and call on you. Because I don't know which channel it's coming over. Looks like Amy J.
Doctor's office?
Yep. Great. Now we're talking. Healing rooms of any kind. You know how, like, you go to the massage therapist and they've got the room all nice and tidy. It smells like clean sheets and the little incense atomizer is burning and the orange light is on. That is that quiet feeling. For a purpose, sixth house, doctor's office. Set up a special way for a special purpose involving healing and service, sixth house.
For some reason, also, like, a laboratory is coming to me, but I'm not sure if that's right.
Absolutely. It's a perfect example of the sixth house because you labor and you think there. You do specific task in the laboratory. Remember that laboratory begins with the word labor. It's a place where you work. Most of it mental. Okay, any more thoughts? I'm going to leave your line open, Amy J. Any more thoughts on the sixth? Okay, so now in terms of a confluence, what are we seeing? How do these themes merge? Service is a good start, right? Now I can't hear anybody except Amy, who's not saying anything. So hold on. Let me go back into interactive mode, and hopefully that noise has tamped down. So, and I'll speak a little bit lower. So what are we seeing as some themes of the sixth?
I'm curious how and service fit together. Like, I can see, like, healing and service, but, like, erotic machines.
Okay, can you say that again? I've silenced all the background. Oh, hold on. Oops. You're unmuted. I'm sorry, Amy, can you repeat that again, please?
Yes. I said, I'm curious how health and service fit together. Like, I can see how it fits together in the context of healing, like a doctor's office, but the broader category of health being in the sixth house combined with service, I'm wondering where the connection
is. Well, that comes into the relationship, right? Because you have the relationship with the healing practitioner who is working in a service, and I don't mean McDonald's, a service profession. Right.
But sixth house is also covering, like, just sort of like your physical health in general, right? Like,
yes.
Something going on in sixth house can represent, like, some issue with your health.
some issue and clues to how to resolve the issue. Yes. So the themes are basically starting to gather around those who serve us, the places where they serve us, but it's not, we're not on the level of mercantile. It's not the butcher shop kind of service. It's more the go to the professional's office and expect the professional treatment in a specific place. Massage room, healing room, therefore the doctor, the nurse, the massage therapist, therefore all the things related to the doctor and the massage table and the need to go there in the first place. So it's kind of like where the healer and the client and the in the room all meet up in the same place. And the attitude you need to get there and the motivation to go there, i.e. my wrist hurts, I've got to go to the massage therapist. Is it making sense to you there, Amy J? Is it, or are you still foggy?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, and a lot of the proof comes in the experimentation, right? And mm-hmm. it makes sense to read a few different descriptions of the sixth house, and it really makes sense to read. I don't want to take the time to look it up, but I can photocopy the pages of Lily describing matters of the sixth house. Would that be helpful? It may take me like a minute to find it. Any thoughts on that? Let's go to Carol Anderberg. Carol. Can you hear me? Carol, did you raise your hand? Okay.
This is Jean Marie.
Okay, someone just raised their hand. Calling from Carol's.
Jean Marie.
Got it. Hi. Speak to me.
So, Eric, so would the sixth house also be how you show up in work and service, or
yes,
that your work is your service to humanity?
It describes your daily work. Yes.
Daily work. Okay.
Your daily work.
So for me, I have Scorpio, and whole signs houses. Scorpio is in my sixth house, and I do healing work with women, helping them to reclaim their pelvic floors, which also includes their sexuality.
Yes.
So that, in a sense, I'm kind of right on with what my natal chart or what my whole sign house chart wanted me to focus in this area. I have the theme correct.
Yeah, it would seem like you're right in the right place in the right time. You're doing sexual healing work associated with the physical part of the body described by Scorpio, the pelvis area.
Yeah.
And now it would be interesting to see, you know, what's in Scorpio and what your Mars and Pluto are doing.
Okay. So Mars is in the fifth house.
And in what sign?
What time?
What sign? What sign? Libra or Scorpio?
Oh, sign. Mars, Aries.
How do you have Aries in the fifth and Scorpio in the sixth?
Okay, so when I'm talking about Scorpio in the sixth, I'm talking about whole sign houses.
Okay, but they still go in the same order.
Okay. See, I think I'm having a brain fart about how to use whole sign houses.
Okay. Do you feel comfortable giving your data out
right now?
Are
you using your sun sign when you're using whole sign houses? I'm sorry, I heard two voices at once.
You may be confusing the horoscope method that I use doing my public readings. What's your ascendant? What's your rising sign?
My rising sign is Scorpio.
Okay. So, we're getting into like several different charts simultaneously. What is your sun sign?
Gemini.
Okay, this is a little bit complicated to do here without even being able to see the chart with tons of people listening.
Yeah.
Would you just write to me and Amy privately and send me your data, and I'll handle your question there. Maybe we can send it back out with your permission to look at it.
Okay.
But taken as a theoretical thing, Scorpio on the 6th would certainly describe a person who might be involved in some form of sexual healing work.
Okay.
For example. And it could be other things. It could be other things as well.
Okay.
You know, they might be a detective. Scorpio on the 6th would make an excellent detective. Right?
Well, that's kind of what I do.
Because Scorpio is psychological. And involves motives. And so Scorpio on the 6th would mean, and you'd like doing daily work dealing with dead bodies, because you have to do that as a detective. If you're a detective, there's your dead body of the day showing up, even here in Little Ulster County. And this is how you deduce it, basically. I'm trying to get to this. The thing with this book is I've got the version written in early, modern, late, middle English. And it's not that easy to find things in it. But let's see if I can get to the sixth house chapter. Ninth house, eighth house, pardon me. This is a facsimile copy of the first edition, which I very prudently spent more money than I had to get back in the day, and now I still have it. It's kind of an investment in the future. Okay, but it's difficult to navigate through this book because it's a 400-year-old book. Okay. So, sixth house, daily activity. Work, exercise, routine, health, service, volunteering, the military, medical situations, health and diet. All of those kind of hang out in the same realm, or for the purpose of astrology, we're going to look at them as being similar. But if you think of service being the thing that runs through it and the concept of routine, it makes sense. Then the last thing is the relationships. This is the relationship between practitioners and clients, for example. Relationships among coworkers. Right? Good there? I know I've got everyone muted almost. Let's see if we can get some silence on opening up the whole group here. All right, we're back in interactive mode where anyone can just speak up.
It's a speakerphone or something.
Okay, it's way too easy for this. If that person with the speakerphone on would please turn it down. Okay, so now let's talk about the cusp of the fifth and the sixth house. This is potentially quite interesting. Do you have a thought about that? If you do, raise your hand. I'm going to clear the previous caller and Amy as nope. Now I've opened you up. Now I'm going to just. Okay, now I can see. No hands raised. Any thoughts? Is the host still unmuted? Yes. Len raised his hand. Len, go for it. Oops, sorry. Len, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Good, you raised your hand. What's up?
Yeah. Okay, well, you wanted to talk about the cusp of the...
the cusp or transition area between the fifth and the sixth. Yep.
Okay. Somebody with the fifth mentioned individuation.
Yes.
And that is something that normally takes place as one emerges into adolescence. And then from individuation, one normally begins spending more time with one's friends and one's parents. So you individuate, and then you blend in again with the people of your age group that you're going to be spending the rest of your life with. This is kind of an area for the cusp between the fifth and the sixth, in that you have to take things into account being socialized and being able to have a group identity. So things like hygiene, and styles of music that a specific generation or group would individuate themselves from the previous generation. And this has to do with, as we're moving through the houses here, beginning with the fourth and moving through to the sixth, as we have, we're moving toward the right-hand side of the chart, the west side of the chart, which has to do with other people. You know, the left-hand side of the chart has to do with more the individual or the subject, and then more toward the right-hand side of the chart having to do with other people or relationships to the subject. So that is kind of the confluence of themes that come up for me on the cusp from the fifth to the sixth.
Okay, so how about this idea? You play bass as a child, but you realize you're really good at it, and you happen to be lucky, and your parents support you. And you're so good at playing bass, you actually start getting gigs.
Right.
Doing the thing, do what you love, that thing. And there's some people who only can do what they love. What would Jerry Garcia have done for a living? Anyone want to take a guess? Really only one job. And so this is a person who took his passion in the fifth house, his pleasure, his joy, and made it into a daily job. And boy, was it a daily job. They put out an album called Working Man's Dead.
Right.
I should study the chart of the first Grateful Dead concert for the concept of, you know, working man's dead. The working artist would be someone who's working the line between the fifth and the sixth house.
Okay.
Right? Someone who's, uh-huh, they're great at art as a kid, and then they're doing it for fun, and then suddenly they find themselves actually able to go to work in an art studio and do it. There's a transition. Now, the physical space of the fifth and the sixth might be the working art studio, an actual art studio that's a professional. Less art for art's sake and more art for art's sake plus going to work every day. The art studio where you go to work every day.
Right. The art studio where people come in and as clients or whatever.
Or you're just you work there. Like Blue Studio.
Right.
It's functions right. as a fifth house play space, but it's also the place where I prefer to go to work every day. I leave my apartment and walk down the block, and I go to work. But I'm at work in an art studio, so it's the working artist space is that cusp of the fifth and the sixth. It's not exactly an office. It's not just an art studio for art's sake. It's where the two concepts meet in the form of the working artist.
Right. And it's below the horizon on the part of the chart that is inherently has to do with relationships.
Well, it certainly starts to bring other people in, and relationships are included. Of course, plenty of houses on the eastern side of the chart also involve relationships.
That's true.
So I think all of the houses involve relationships. The way that I think of the left and right hemispheres of the chart is more about asserting influence, but these theories don't hold up for very long because there's so many experiences of either house, of any house. But
that's a good point.
But for example, if you're a working artist, you're going to have collegial relationships.
Yes. Like the Impressionists.
What's that?
The Impressionist painters had collegial relationships.
Sure, as do astrologers. You and I have a sixth house collegial relationship. We work for the same company, and we're working in a similar philosophy of what we do. We speak the same professional language, and you're hanging out here right now.
Right.
But
so collegial relationships is a good term. I like that.
Yeah. So where these houses meet, they are these special places that defy easy pat explanations. And remember that part of the problem of astrology books, which are still better than web pages for the most part, is that to teach, generally people feel like they have to reduce things down to a completely unambiguous form, but that does not lend itself well to astrology, where we have to work in meta concepts. So
I agree with you.
Right? So the fifth and sixth house meeting has a lot of possibilities.
Yes, it does.
You know, and there's all kinds of fun there. And it's the place where essentially work and play merge. However that happens in one's life.
I agree with that.
Awesome. So we've now gone from, we've done fourth cusp into fourth house cusp. We started with the IC. Then we went through the fourth and then the fifth house cusp. Things that are in the develop out of childhood and become real interests. Older child able to play, into all forms of play and pleasure. And notice the contrast of the fourth being about security and the fifth being about taking risks.
Big contrast.
It's a contrast. We all need both, right? And typically we find most people are more into the security part than the risks part. Well, how do you have more fun? Well, you have to take some risks. You have to take a chance and have some fun. You have to get on the train and go to the city and roam around and take a chance, not knowing what's going to happen. How do you have fun? You have to be creative about it.
Sort of like when you first leave home, or allowed to leave home when you're a kid, when being out of the sight of your parents and them not being able to see what you're doing all the time, and the types of things that you do when, you know, where you take some risks that you wouldn't necessarily do if your parents were watching.
Yes. Brilliant. Ah, what a awesome thing to add to fifth house delineation. What you do when your parents aren't watching.
That's right. And that lends to the individuation.
Hell yeah.
And then when you move into the sixth house, it's when that you find others who have individuated themselves similarly or at about the same time, which is kind of like the generational thing.
Yep. Excellent. Yes. And now we're ready to talk about the seventh, which is partnerships.
Yep.
Which can include classical astrology, seventh house, open partners and open enemies. So the seventh is the house of the open, known relationship. You get married,
yep.
You declare it. This is my girlfriend.
Or you go steady with somebody.
Yeah, going steady with somebody. And the announcement's made, and you wear my ring and I wear your ring. That's going in more into the seventh. It surfaces. It comes above the horizon. People don't necessarily know who you work with, but you tend to advertise who your girlfriend is. You know, you put it on Facebook. You can link them and all that stuff.
Definitely and seventh house.
So now we have a more evolved form of partnership, which would include, for example, a business partnership or a marriage partnership.
Which is visible.
And it's two people joining for a purpose is the seventh.
Yep.
So you can see there's a natural evolution out of the sixth and into the seventh. And someone in the Mountain Astrologer a couple of years ago said they were surprised by why the sixth house wasn't considered a more significant relationship house, given how many relationships begin at work.
But those are usually kind of on the down low.
Yeah, well, with all the ethics rules and all this, and all sex needing a victim in the United States, they're more on the down low. But in actual fact, a lot of people meet at work.
Yep, that's right.
And you know, I wish we weren't so frantic in our society where there have to be all these rules. It's a good thing that, you know, on Morning Joe, apparently Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski are having an affair, and they're the hosts of Morning Joe. 20, 30 years ago, they both would have been fired.
Yep.
But they're making too much money for the network. And we're kind of at the point where, well, gee, they both seem to be consenting adults.
Yep.
No one cares.
Yep.
Or as my friend the prosecutor says, you marry your scandal. That's another subject. That's how you make the scandal go away, is you marry it. So and that's an interesting seventh house theme, right? That it has a kind of a sanctified theme. It's like, oh, now the relationship is official. We're married. Okay. Well, go say what you will. We're married.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a
so
public statement.
We could go through all the houses this way, but I want to get a sense. I'm going to open up the floor here for a second and get a sense of whether you feel you have the equipment now to look at a house and be able to start to size it up using this method.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, good. Got a couple of yeses there. Got some hands up too. Okay. So let's see. There is all. Everyone's open. So, Pamela, do you have a question?
Now this is a different Pam. This is Pam from Atlanta. I think there's another Pam on there.
Yep,
from
Pamela
North
L.
Carolina,
from Atlanta. But, yep.
Okay. And basically, what I was going to say, and it may be a little bit late in the process, is that I look at from the first chart all the way over to the sixth chart, and then even through the 12th, as almost like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It's sort of like when you first come in as a child, you know, it's sort of like you're all that really exists. It's always sort of like me, mine, what, how I look at myself, how I think I'm showing myself to the world. And then it's like the second house, you start realizing that there really is a world. And so now you're looking at it from a more, you know, what's important to me. It's my, now that there's somebody else, now it can be my stuff. And, you know, that's my shit. You leave it alone.
My stuff, and so my it's self-esteem, like what, yes.
Yeah.
Third house.
So then, you move into the third house, it's more of a it's like my neighborhood. You're expanding your world a little bit. Before it's just your mom. Now it's your brothers and sisters and your, you know, the bank that you drive through that gives you the lollipop. And then
and
you
sharing
move
your
into
stuff.
The,
no, wait. And don't miss one important thing. Second house is your stuff. And third house is sharing your stuff. Mercantile.
Right.
It's the cup of sugar that you lend your neighbor, and it's also the bag of sugar you sell your neighbor.
Yeah. It's true. Both of those, yeah. But, I mean, it's sort of like it builds. So I see that transition that you were talking about from, like, the fifth where you're becoming creative, and then what you become creative at and you love oftentimes turns into your career.
Yes.
So that moves you sort of into the sixth house and what gifts you're going to be able to give, which is your service. And then once you have that established, this is all that happens below the horizon. Then it's sort of like you're ready to make that leap into a more negotiative position, which I see the seventh house is more, where you're starting to negotiate. Where do I fit in? It's, like you said, relationships at work as well as relationships with a spouse or significant other. And, again, you know, it's sort of like, oh, well, I work for this company or I'm married to this person. Sort of like it defines you in the world. It's sort of that sense of getting to that point where you belong in the outer world, and now you're at risk of all the things that are happening to you, maybe a little bit out of the safety of your internal, personal, you're putting yourself out there.
Yeah,
it's more
and
of a vulnerable.
What happens to your partner happens to you. The thing about a committed relationship, whether it's a partner, business partnership or marriage partnership, is that what happens to you happens to your partner.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Very true.
Right? If I'm married and my wife is arrested for DUI, it's my problem.
Yeah.
If I'm married,
right,
and my wife wins lotto, Good for me. We both won that money.
But now you got to move to the eighth house.
Now we're going to move to the eighth house. And let's end the discussion at the eighth house. That's a good place to leave it. So, seventh house, open enemies, open partners. What happens to me happens to you. The relationship is known. It's in some way sanctified or certified, whether it's a limited liability partnership or a company or a marriage. What happens as we move toward the eighth cusp? Should we look at the eighth as its own independent thing? Let's look at the eighth. The eighth is I think the second most interesting house. And let's do a popcorn style talk on the eighth, and then I'm going to tell you what Lily said. You might even know what Lily said. Len, don't blow this one. Well, keep that thought.
Okay.
Len knows the answer to this because I've been babbling about it for my entire career. Eighth house. What we got in there?
Inheritance.
Yes. I knew that voice. Is that someone I know?
Cheryl.
Okay. Inheritance. What else?
How we die.
Yes. Style and manner of death.
Intimacy.
Transformation.
Transformation. Associated with death. Death. Intimacy.
Power.
Empowerment or power. Yeah.
Power is a really important
power
one.
Power over.
Power over is it's a very people interesting set of themes related to power in the eighth, but let's call it generally power and power over, including power under. What's that?
Did you say intimacy in the eighth house?
Yeah, there's a definite theme of intimacy as an extension of the seventh.
Ah, got it. Okay.
Right?
Is this the one that's death and dowry?
Yes.
Okay.
Death, dowry, and the substance of the bride, and not how big her breasts are, how much money her grandfather or her father have. That's what the substance of the bride is. Is she wealthy? And so the yes? Yes?
Secret?
Secrets. Yes, secrets. Excellent. Okay, let's keep going. Come on, there's much more in here.
Of contract and money.
Yes.
Taxes.
Contractual expectations.
Say again?
Contractual expectations.
Yep.
Contracts.
Yep.
The occult or mysticism, mystery. That would come from the ninth, but maybe there's an overlap.
There's going to be relating themes in the eighth and the ninth, but that which is generally occulted, veiled, like the contents of the will, are veiled till the will's opened. So that which there's a veiled quality to the eighth house.
Hmm.
Right?
I think of spending, being responsible for spending other people's money.
Other people's resources is a general topic, yes.
Exploitation?
Can certainly be an eighth house theme. Related to power, it could come up anywhere, but when there's the power angle, it can be exploitative, yep.
Mm-hmm. Like intense themes and control themes?
Can be, definitely. Of course, there's other ways that might show up, but because sex and there's a strong sexual theme of the eighth and the money theme, right? Because it's death and dowry. You're investing in the shared resource known as your partner's sexuality.
Prostitution? And,
yes. Yep.
Drug and alcohol?
Pardon?
Drugs and alcohol?
Yeah, I'm not.
Addiction.
Let's hold that on the side. I'm not sure. How do you make that association to the eighth?
Because there are names of. I guess maybe that's 12th house. They seem to sort of grease the skids to these really profound and deep states. Oftentimes, removing inhibitions.
That's interesting. I'm going to take that under advisement, and let's, you know, if we're really feeling like running the marathon, we can consider the 12th. But the 12th has an interesting resonance with the 8th because it involves occulted matters, things that are hidden from plain view. And by the way, it's an interesting semi-paradox of the 8th is above the horizon, but we enter a realm of above the horizon of secrets, and I would call the 8th a house of open secrets. Secrets and open secrets. He married her for the money. Right? Open secrets.
Like everybody knows so-and-so is having an affair.
I would say that affairs are... One place to look for affairs is the 8th, but this is also for the impact on the marriage. Affairs usually have a much more alive feeling than we think of in the 8th house. There's more of a vibrancy, like they're a 5th house experiment. That has an impact on the primary partner.
I remember when earlier we were talking about the 4 and the IC, there was a little bit of discussion about ancestors and then the 12th being more of the long list of ancestors that we don't know. I'm wondering where the ancestral part played into. There's the inheritance part, but can you talk a little bit about where the ancestral lineage plays into eighth house stuff?
In-laws. It's the merging of two lineages happens in the eighth. Because there's that transfer of the money and the bride in the eighth. Right? There's a property association with the eighth. I mean, I was at a wedding recently where, you know, they really did the whole thing of giving away the bride. And I'm up in the balcony photographing this wedding thinking, wow, this is really eighth house. There, and then there's a transformation. I now pronounce you Mr. and Mrs. Christopher Finkelstein. Civil death. A concept we need to understand better. Civil death. One identity dies and another identity is born. This is pointed out by the early feminists, that when a woman becomes Mrs. John Finkelstein, and some right. still do, she has experienced civil death. Judy Cohen no longer exists, particularly going back 50, 60, 100, 200 years. Mm-hmm. And in Roman times, I would be Eric and my wife would be Erica. Women didn't have names. I don't know if anyone knows this about Roman times, but when you should cringe a little when you hear the word romantic, because it means in the style of the Romans. And in the style of the Romans, women were so possessed and so transferred that the deed transfer was so thorough, they didn't have a name. In modern times, it's Judy Cohen becomes Mrs. John Finkelstein, but she still has a name. But it's a throwback to that. So there's a death and transformation quality with that, only it's metaphorical and wealth is transferred. Now, the eighth has a series of very interesting sexual properties. And Dave Arner, one of my teachers, one of the Davids who taught me astrology, niftily summed it up as the sex you want. Like, really want. The thing you keep coming back to, that's the thing that you have to have, is an eighth house thing. And it's likely to be something of an open secret because you have to talk about it to get it. Your partners have to know about it. Whereas my take on the 12th's approach to sexuality is it's the things that are so out there you won't even say it. But the eighth is the sex that you're willing to negotiate to get. I need to be tied up, and I need you to be wearing leather and flog me with that thing. You've got to negotiate that agreement. Right? And it's an open secret, basically. We're going to go to the sex club, and this is what we're going to do. We're going to have it in the dungeon, but the dungeon is like a room in the house. Whereas the 12th is the thing that you can't even say. It's unspeakable. And, by the way, it's great fun to put it into words. And so one thing I've seen with strong 8th house charts is that it tends to be magnetic. Like you're reading a chart for a woman, and she's got like Venus and Mars and Mercury and this and that all in the 8th house. She might be the person people would like follow her as she was walking home from school. Like the guy in the car driving along as she's walking home saying, "Hey, little girl, you want some candy?" And she's like, "No, my mother said I shouldn't take candy from strangers. Go away." That is an indication of a strong 8th house. And so it's a good place to look for kinks. Now, the kinks can show up anywhere in the chart, but the 8th is a good place to start that inquiry. Yeah.
I don't want to necessarily, like, hijack to get insight on my chart, but it has always sort of plagued me. Or at least it keeps coming back, and I sort of wonder the best way to work this. But I have an 8th house Aquarius moon, which is also my chart ruler, and it is conjunct Vesta.
Why is it your chart ruler? Cancer rising 8th house Aquarius moon is your ascendant ruler in the 8th, right?
Yes.
Conjunct Vesta.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
And there's a bunch of other aspects in the chart for that as well.
Yes. What is your name? Who am I talking to?
This is Peter.
Got it. Okay. So we should talk about this off list because you've also, I have Cancer rising, 8th house Aquarius moon, conjunct Vesta. We can compare notes.
Okay.
And then I'll give you the numbers of any women in my life who are willing to talk to you, and they can tell you what they think. My 8th house, 8th house Aquarius moon. And notice I said plural, right? Because when it's 8th house Aquarius moon, there's going to be more than one. It's Aquarius.
Yep.
Okay. Oh.
So there's, for example, a stylistic thing, right? Aquarius on the 8th. Ah, what's that doing? That's intersecting a group concept, Aquarius, with the 8th. So now we get the 8th in the style of a group.
Yeah, I got Aquarius there too. Yeah.
And the layers start to make sense, and you can, like, look at the chart, and you turn it sideways, and you look at it. Ah! It pops out like those magic eye books. You just got to stare at it, focus behind the chart, look in front of the chart, flip the chart upside down. If you're out in the rain, look at where the raindrops hit the chart and make the ink run, et cetera, et cetera.
So if your 8th house doesn't have any planets in it, you look to where the planets that rule or that are in Scorpio are in your chart? Or you look to what planets are in Scorpio in your chart?
No, skip the Scorpio bit for a second because we're not associating the 8th directly with Scorpio. The question is, what sign do you have on the 8th house cusp?
Leo.
Great. Where's your sun?
Aquarius.
So it's sort of like in the second house, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So that would show an association. It's a strong association between self and other, partnership and relationship to self. And there's an interesting self-esteem question there that is a kind of a long dance about the way that you negotiate your self-esteem through the process of intimate relationships.
Hmm.
Plus, we can look at other planets that are in there. You know, you can, for free, go to the Serenu, S-E-R-E-N-N-U. We'll put it on the resourcespage.com. Select degrees of Zodiac, and you'll get a listing. Listening in the future. Is this even still recording? Yeah, we're still recording.
Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Moderator ID accepted. All guests are currently unmuted. To mute all guests, press ##. For help with host options, press *0. You will now be connected with the conference.
Fine. Good. I'm back. Okay, sorry about that. My Skype call dropped. So you can look up the full contents of your eighth house just by going to a minor planet. That'll give you a couple of years of research as you look at every one of those points and dig up articles on planet waves and so forth.
Okay. What was the website you referenced?
It's Tracy Delaney's site, and it's Serenu. It's a Welsh word, I think. SERENNU.com. And we'll put it on the resources page. And you go to Ephemeris,
fine.
And you work the tool there, and you can set for any time or date. It uses Greenwich Mean Time, or Universal Time. So you set for GMT, basically, and you get a list. I mean, and we can handle that in the email discussion if you want to learn how to work that site or go deeper, or I can do a short little audio for it. And for some features, you need a password, but you can get it for like $1 a month or something.
Okay.
And it's just basically Tracy and her laptop doing this genius level programming. Okay, so we're getting here. We've actually gone very sixth house style. 4 hours flew by the way. That's one of the ways you know you're in the sixth house. It's time flies when you get lost in your work. Is time flies when you're having fun. But the sixth is time flies when you're lost in your work. And this is where we've been. Okay, so going forward, we have this email list. I realize email lists are not popular. We can move this onto a Facebook page. I don't mind whoever sees this. So it might be more fun to put it on a Facebook page because it consolidates things in one place, and not email is become very ephemeral because the threads are far flung. So let's start the discussion on email, and we can then agree to move to a Facebook page. So we have a more coherent discussion thread. There's a resources page. The recordings will be posted by today, and we'll get them out to you. There's going to be the playback version of the recording in Instant Teleseminar, and then I've done a studio-quality Planet Waves FM-style recording sitting in the exact same place, and that'll be in approximately two-hour sessions. And this has been an absolutely fantastic conversation, so thank you all.
Thank you. And I think the Facebook page is a great idea.
Okay, we will set that up. We'll set that up under my account. And the only thing is everyone's got to have Facebook. Most people have Facebook. So it's not that scary. And it doesn't know what you don't tell it. It's not the NSA that knows everything that you don't tell it. Facebook only knows what you tell it, pretty much. Unless their cookies are spying on you, and then it'll try to sell you the same blender that you already bought.
Right.
Which could be worse.
Absolutely.
All right. So,
you look great, Eric.
Yeah, thank you all. And thanks
for
supporting Planet
Waves.
Thank you.
And, yes.
If you're not already a Planet Waves member, I know most of you are, please do sign up. We really depend on that steady flow of monthly income to make payroll, basically, is what that's about, and paying the rent. And this class has helped us get through a challenging month, which was September, that Mercury retrograde. And so this has been a benefit concert for Planet Waves and all that we do. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Eric.
Yeah, bye for now.
Bye.
Eric.
Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.